You're listening to The Leonard LoPage Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Well, they used to be scary, isolated dumping grounds, places where someone else, not you or your parents, wound up living out the sad last days of their lives. I'm talking, of course, about nursing homes. But today, as our population ages and we're all looking more closely at where we want to hang out, nursing homes are taking center stage, and no more so than in Tina Howe's spirited new play, Chasing Monet. It stars Jane Alexander as the fiercely independent artist, Catherine Sargent, who comes to share a room in the Mount Airy nursing home up on New York's west side, I should point out, with a very different kind of woman. Chasing Monet is playing in a limited run through Saturday, May 2nd at 59 East 59 Theaters. You probably remember Tina Howe for her plays, Painting Churches, Coastal Disturbances, and Pride's Crossing. Jane Alexander won a Tony for her performance in The Great White Hope and has some, 100 or so stage roles to her credit. I'm so delighted to have both of them here with me today. Jane and Tina, welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
How long has it been since the two of you worked together?
50 years, almost to the day, because Jane produced and ended up starring in my first little dramatic offering that I wrote in Sarah Lawrence my senior year, typically a play about the end of the world. And dear Jane saw promise in it, and because she ended up directing it and starring in it, it was a triumph.
Now, Tina Howe, your good friend Jane Alexander, with whom you went to Sarah Lawrence, right?
Yes.
Both were students there. So you worked together 50 years ago. It must have been some terrific performance if it took you 50 years to get back together.
Well, actually, Tina forgets that I was in her wonderful play, Approaching Zanzibar, in the 1980s in New York.
Oh, so she left one out.
She left a really good one out.
Okay. Yeah. Well, all right. So now you're back together. Let's first talk about the play in that wonderful 59 East 59. I just love that theater. It's such a sweet complex of theaters. But the play is called Chasing Monet, and on the stage is this picture of the Monet. Jane, describe it to me. What's the picture all about?
It's Le Déjeuner sur l'Herbe, a picnic on the grass, luncheon on the grass, and it has a naked woman front and center surrounded by two dressed men of the 19th century.
And this was a painting that shocked proper society, right? So we learn from the get-go that this play, Tina Howe, is meant to shock us a little bit. There's going to be something shocking happening in here.
Well, yeah, I suppose you could put it that way, because the character Jane plays was an artist. This painting means a great deal to her because it was an iconic painting that showed that a painter could paint what they imagined, not just what they saw. And in that regard, it was really way ahead of its time. And so Catherine, as a feisty woman who's very angry at being in the home, more than anything else, wants to get out and wants to escape to Paris to stand in front of that wonderful painting again, to be reminded that, in fact, a woman and a painter can paint whatever they want and get away with it.
Jane Alexander, does this resonate with you? Do you see yourself as somebody who would not lie there silently as age creeps up?
You bet. Rage against the dying of the light. And Catherine is definitely that feisty person. She's totally compos mentis. She's blind. She's legally blind. She can make out shapes. But she really needs some attention and care, and that's why she's in the home and her son can't. You know, it's a common problem with people. I had the same thing with my father. You just can't take care of them at home.
Well, we've all dealt with this issue of putting our parents in places like this or figuring out what to do with them. And as I mentioned at the top, many of us are thinking, what's ahead for us? Okay, so Catherine's not there alone, as we've mentioned. Catherine winds up with a roommate. Tina Howe, why that particular roommate?
Because as my very waspy, blue-blooded Aunt Mattie, my mother's sister, was languishing in the Baptist home for the aged, my Jewish husband's 100-year-old Uncle High was having a blast in an assisted living facility in New Jersey, being visited by his huge, adoring family that would be eating and telling jokes and having a great time and taking him out on the weekends. And just
you're telling me that a Jewish nursing home was more interesting than a WASPy nursing home?
Well, get this. While my Aunt Mattie was at the Baptist Home for the Aged in Riverdale, it was acquired by the Hebrew Home for the Aged. And it was then, from then on, it was called Hebrew Home for the Aged Baptist Division. And so I immediately got this idea. What if a WASPy, angry, blue-blooded woman were to get an ebullient Jewish roommate who had came along with this huge, adoring family? And just let me say one thing. You talk about the play being done at 59 East 59, but the theater that's producing it is Primary Stages.
Okay, fine.
And I just want to be sure to give them the plug that they deserve for taking on this risky play.
Absolutely. So, okay, here's this encounter between these two interesting women. And, Tina Howe, you've written about interesting women before. You've written about your own roots. You've written about your roots on the North Shore of Massachusetts and kind of an uptight society crowd, would you say?
I would say. Sweet, dear, full of nostalgia, harmless in a way. I mean, that's what's so sad that, you know, when I was growing up, the WASPy sort of leaders of industry and the academy, I had all these presidents of Harvard in my background. But bit by bit, they began to lose their power, and a whole other generations of people supplanted them. So there is something elegiac about watching the dear, sweet, alcoholic WASPs trailing up and down New England beaches. And I think audiences enjoy seeing them because it's a group that has vanished pretty much off the face of the earth. So there's something nostalgic and sweet, and one can feel vaguely superior to them, I think.
Tina Howe is the author of Chasing Monet, now playing here in New York, and Jane Alexander, my other guest, is the star of the play. Tina Howe, let me just finish up with this. You mentioned you had Harvard presidents and things in your background. You also had a famous artist in your background.
Actually, my mother was an amateur painter. I was thinking more of Honor Moore's grandmother, Margaret Sargent, who Honor wrote this wonderful biography, The White Blackbird, about her grandmother, who in fact did leave her husband and her five children to be a painter in Paris.
Oh, and that's why. All right, so that's why John Singer Sargent is a distant relative of Catherine Jane
right.
Alexander, the character that you are playing.
Right.
So, did you, Jane, when you approached this role, was this someone you knew? Somehow, did you get a sense of her?
I grew up in Boston, but I didn't have Boston roots. My mother was a Southie from South Boston by way of Nova Scotia, and my father was from North Platte, Nebraska. But I went to day school with a lot of these women, like Catherine Sargent. So I know them darn well. And so I felt comfortable playing her.
And I should point out to our listeners that seconds before we went on the air, we were having a little conversation, and Tina Howe, the playwright, admitted something that Jane Alexander, the star, didn't know before. Tina, I said to you, is this character somebody that you were related to? And you said,
well, it's actually me, I think. It's sort of what I would like to be if and when I am deposited in a nursing home, you know, confused and angry and upset. And I would love to have the courage and the opportunity to escape. And just let me say this one thing, that I really wrote the play in an attempt to console myself and everybody else I know who is, you know, one sooner or later is going to face the prospect of aging and is sooner or later is going to face the prospect of being in a home. And I wanted to see if there was any way I could find consolation for all of us.
I like the sooner or later part of it.
Yeah,
that's very
right.
Good. So, but, Jane, what do you think now that your old friend and college mate tells you that the role you're playing is, in fact, herself?
It's hard for me to believe. First of all, Catherine has such deep wells of anger in her, which Tina Howe does not. Tina's one of the most nurturing, wonderful women I know in terms of caring for other people. Catherine is much more egocentric, has not done a good job with her son at all, which is not true of Tina and her children, so blah, blah, blah. I do not see Tina in there. However, I can imagine Tina, if she were in such a situation, becoming very feisty and wanting to get out and figuring out with her brilliant mind how to get out.
And one of the things you mentioned before, one of the things in your role is that you are, as you say, legally blind. How do you prepare for a role like this? You are such an extraordinary actress. You can probably do anything, certainly can do anything. But how do you figure this one out?
Oh, blindness is not difficult at all to play, actually. You just can't connect with other people's eyes. You don't. But I can look as I am looking at you right now, and you would think that I'm blind because I'm not connecting with your eyes, right?
That's amazing.
Yeah,
yeah, it is, because I'm used to making eye contact. I think we all are.
Yes.
And one of the ways that you avoid people sometimes when you walk down the street is you don't make eye contact. But the minute you make eye contact, you're there, or at least I'm there.
Yeah.
You're looking at me right now, and you're telling me you can be playing that you're blind?
Yeah, I'm looking at you, and if you were to meet me on the street, you would think I probably was blind if I was talking to you, right?
So what you're saying is that playing a blind person really isn't any different than playing a sighted person in many ways.
Oh, no. Oh. No, you have to just be aware as an actress that you can't, you know, there's certain parameters that you're not capable of handling in terms of space and objects.
Yeah, so when she crosses the room, she has to feel the walls and she has to feel for objects that might be in her way. So,
right. Mm-hmm.
And also Jane has a few beloved friends who are legally blind, and I know that she mm-hmm. has spent a lot of time studying them and you mm-hmm. know, sort of miming what they do. So mm-hmm. she's very, you know, Jane is enormously sensitive. There's that instinctive well of behavior in her, but she's also a very keen observer.
Yeah, my great-grandmother was blind. She was in a home for the blind all her last year, so.
So you got to figure that out.
I'd like to say one thing, because I may be the leading role in the play, but Lynn Cohen, who plays Rennie, is the other leading role. There are two of us. And Lynn plays this remarkable, wonderful character, Rennie, who has dementia. And she's the little Jewish one, and I'm the tall wasp.
And
one.
She's the one who comes up with the idea, the plot, to spring you from your nursing home,
she
right?
She does, yep.
It's exciting. Let's talk a little bit about process. Tina Howe, when you're writing a play like this, when you wrote this play specifically, did you have Jane in mind? Did you have an actor in mind?
I really didn't have anybody in mind. I was just trying to figure out sort of the deeper currents in myself that had to do with, terror. I think the play is me lowering myself into the most frightening area I could go, namely that prospect of aging and being trapped. And so I really wasn't so much thinking of who would perform it as I was thinking of how do I translate this onto the page. And also, if you start thinking of actors that you love, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be unavailable. So I figured don't set your heart on somebody because they probably won't be able to do it. And so I don't fall into that trap.
So tell me about the phone conversation or the lunch or the email in which the two of you got together on this.
I had been trying various avenues in terms of having the play read and exploring different ways of bringing it to light, and the play was very tricky because it's all about finding the tone of the elegiac aspect of the home and the friskiness of the escape, and I was sort of hitting a brick wall as to how to get the tone, and suddenly I thought, Jane Alexander is the one to play Catherine. Jane is the one. And she knew I'd written the play, and she knew I was having readings with other actors. And I called her, and I said, Jane, I got it. You're the one to play this role. Will you, please, 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 please? And Jane said, well, let me read it. Let me see what my schedule is like.
Let's just quickly go to Jane, then we have to take a break. And she said, will you? And you read it?
Oh, yeah, I read it, and right away said, you bet.
I love this. Happy endings. Stay with this. I'm speaking with playwright Tina Howe and actress Jane Alexander, who stars in Tina Howe's new play, Chasing Monet, at 59 East 59 Theater, now through May 2nd. We will be back with more with them after this break. Hi, I'm Lynn Scherer, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and we've been talking to Jane Alexander, starring in a new play, Chasing Monet, at 59 East 59 Theaters, and the playwright Tina Howe. Tina Howe, I have to say to you, I loved Pride's Crossing, which, gosh, that was Lincoln Center. How many years ago was that?
1997.
Wonderful play, starring Cherry Jones, yep. Of course. And one of the moments that, several of the moments that I loved, because the star is a woman who has swum the English Channel, is a whole conversation about her swimming. And there's one moment, which I'm going to quote back at you, where, who's Mary? That's her niece or her granddaughter? It's Mabel's. Or is that the nurse? At any rate, Mary says to her, what on earth do you think about when you're swimming hour after hour? And Mabel, the star, says, well, nothing really. I count my strokes and I sing songs. And Mary says, songs? What kind of songs? And Mabel says, nursery rhymes mostly. Row, row, row your boat, the farmer in the dell. I sing each one 200 times and then I move on to another. And Prue says, I'd go mad. And Mabel says, it's relaxing, actually. Nobody could have written that line unless she is also a swimmer.
Ah, yes, 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 yes. Well, it's pathetic. I do laps at the JCC pool, and I wear flippers. And because of the flippers, you can go faster. And what I do is I swim in the fast lane with the buff young guys, and I swim in their wake. And because their wake is so turbulent and I have my flippers, I can keep up with them.
Oh, cool.
So I'm the old granny, you know, swimming behind these gorgeous young men.
With and do you sing nursery rhymes?
No. I sort of count my blessings that I'm afloat.
Where did you come up with a channel swimmer sings nursery rhymes?
It just seemed the logical thing. Usually when you're swimming in the, you know, long swims, your mind is a blank. And actually, I think I asked a few people because I sort of did research about long-distance swimmers.
Well, you got a lot of it. I'm not a long-distance swimmer, but I'm a swimmer. I actually am a lap swimmer, so you got a lot of it right. And it's for those of us who are swimmers, it's kind of nice to be acknowledged in this way. And you acknowledge swimming in Chasing Money as well.
Well, and then I was commissioned to write a play for young actresses, and I set it in a pool, and it was during a class of nursing mothers' water aerobics, during which all the nursing mothers leak milk into the pool. So the play is called Milk and Water. No, I'm obsessed with pools.
Obsessed with water is great. Obsessed with swimming. I'm there as well. Jen Alexander, let's switch tracks here for just a moment. You have not only wowed us with your acting, but you were chairperson of the National Endowment for the Arts from 1993 through 1997. Arts funding was in trouble in those days. Arts funding was cut a lot. How has it changed, if at all, and what are the consequences that we might be feeling?
Well, we got a great boost, the NEA, just recently, $50 million in the stimulus package under the new administration, and this will bring the NEA to its highest level ever. It was around $144 million recently, up from the $99 million that the Congress cut.
What will that $50 million bring us?
It will bring us a lot more stability in arts organizations, many of which are struggling right now across the country to keep afloat, and many of which have already gone under, you know.
Give me some examples of a program, if you know. Do you know exactly what's going on? I mean, do you know where that money might be going? Is there a plan for that? Is there something you desperately wanted to do when you were chair of the endowment?
Well, I was also interested in keeping organizations stable from year to year, and also nurturing individual artists. I hope the individual artist grants will return under this. But right now, they are apparently offering challenge-free. That means you can apply for this grant. You do not have to raise the money in your own community to match it right now as a way of keeping your organization afloat. And I understand also that the grants will be decided within months, not a whole 8 months to a year.
So this is good news, clearly, for artists, for young people who we really want to see have more exposure to the arts in this country.
Yes, through arts organizations, through community organizations. And I think part of that's also going to go to arts education.
Even though the playwright is sitting right next to you, Jane, can you tell me what, in fact, has been, is there such a thing as a favorite role? I know it's kind of like choosing your favorite child. I'm thinking about Eleanor Roosevelt. I'm thinking... well, you tell me. What is there one that when you're lying in bed at night, you kind of think about that one?
Well, I love playing Eleanor Roosevelt because it introduced me to this remarkable mind and personality. It was certainly a challenge and very rewarding personally. Calamity Jane I loved because I always wanted to be
a cowgirl.
A cowgirl, you bet.
We all do.
But
yeah.
She was really more of a groupie and unfortunately a part-time prostitute than she was a cowgirl. But
well, perhaps some people want to be that too. You know, everybody has a different goal.
Maybe. But she was a great rider. That there's no doubt about that. And a great shot, sure shot with her rifle. I think Catherine ranks up there with one of the greatest roles I've ever played, Catherine Sargent in Tina's play right now, because she's just so fully rounded. Tina has her so happy at the end. My little 9-year-old granddaughter, Isabel Moon Alexander, came to see the play, and she said, "Nana, you were so mean in the first act, but you were so happy at the end of the play." I said, "That's right, and that is a totally rounded role and glorious to play."
Tell me, Tina, has it been any kind of a strain on your friendship? You and Jane have known each other for so long to be in this situation. You're shaking your head no before
strain,
I even finish the question.
Strain, please. Strain to work with Jane. It's a glory. It's a
so
celebration.
This is no, girlfriend's
no, no,
no. time.
Never,
then.
Never a strain. Never a strain. That's totally not the right word to use. Never a strain. Just a glory, a total glory. No, Jane, I mean, look at her. Jane is the best. She's just the best.
Well, the two of you actually look a little bit alike. It's sort of interesting here. Jane, is it fair to ask? Of course it's fair to ask. I can ask anything I want. You don't have to answer. But what role have you never played? What's the big one that got away? Or what's the one that you'd still like to tackle if you could get a shot?
Oh, still tackle that. You know, those roles are behind me pretty much, the ones, because at my age, there's just not that many out there. But I wanted desperately to play in the movie Julia.
Oh.
Way back in the 70s. And it went to this Brit called, what's her name? Vanessa Redgrave or something like that. Anyway, that was one that got away.
Did you agonize over that?
Well, I just always wanted to play her.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it didn't happen. You know, that's the way. So,
how does it work in your business when you miss out on a role like that? Do you, in fact, get to say, okay, I'll get the next one? Or does it eat at you for days, weeks, months?
It doesn't eat at me at all very much. It's just I would have had loved to try it. And Vanessa is a remarkable actress, so I'm not ever going to say that I should have done that.
Let's talk about this issue about being an actor who is not 11 or 12 or 15 or even 35. This role clearly was made for someone like you. And Tina, you've written plays with older women stars. What's the state of the art right now? Are women doing better in this department, or is it really just finding either one of you, is it really just finding that role out there?
I don't think there are that many roles for older women, and certainly feisty older women. So often I think older women are seen as decrepit and sad. And
not sexy.
Yeah, and this has become a sort of mandate with me. And having written Chasing Manet with these two feisty 80-year-olds, I wasn't ready to give up. And so my next play, which is called Flood, is an adaptation of an Ovid tale with an old couple, married couple. And they are 120 years old.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm on some...
Not
you know,
combined. You're
no,
talking
no,
each
no, no,
one
no.
is...
Each one is 120, and I'm on this collision course with the truly aged, because I think as you get older and older, the membranes between what you should do and what you want to do get thinner, and so that these old folks are in a state of sublime transparency.
Tina Howe, the author of Chasing Manet, which is now playing at 59 East 59 and about to show us, a new play, Flood, and Jane Alexander starring in Chasing Manet. Jane, what do you say to other young actors who are in their prime now and enjoying being young and curvaceous and being picked for all the good parts? And how do you, how do you advise them to get by that dry period, which is going to inevitably happen?
Oh, yes. Well, I like to talk to younger people a lot, and I also do some teaching, and Tina does too. I believe in mentoring. I believe in letting them learn from my experience if they can, just talking to them. And I say it happens to everybody. It happens to all actors. It happens to playwrights. It happens to everybody in all kinds of businesses.
Oh, it never happens in my business.
Oh, no. Never happens in broadcasting or journalism. Never. No, there are always dry periods, but you just have to keep on soldiering.
And is the outlook with when you look at your friend Tina, who is clearly taking all of this into consideration, because Tina, this is what you're living through, is the solution for more women to start writing plays, movie scripts, in order for more roles to be there for older women? What do you think?
I think more women are stepping to the fore, and more women are being recognized. I mean, to wit, wonderful Lynn Nottage winning the Pulitzer for Ruined, and one of the runners-up, I'm going to say her name wrong, Gina Gianfrido for her Becky Shaw. So more and more younger women are entering the fray, And as they enter the fray, they're also bringing a new sensibility with them, that their plays are not the traditional linear Aristotelian, offering in which there are the usual rules of pity and fear. But these plays tend to deal more with transformation. Sarah Rule and her extraordinary success with her surreal, beautiful plays. In one of them, melancholy play, a woman turns into an almond. She turns into an almond.
This is good news?
On the stage. I think so.
We'll have to have a conversation about this. Really. I'm not sure that's the best news I've heard. I like the concept of celebrating older women in terms of what the wonderful things are that we can find from them instead of feeling pity for them. I don't get the nut part.
No. But it's a glorious transformation.
Okay.
And almonds connote all sorts of very aromatic, sexy things.
So this is on stage. Jane, what about in the movies, another place where you've spent an awful lot of time? Any good news for older women and roles on the big screen?
I got to tell you, Lynn, I'm in this huge blockbuster called Terminator Salvation coming out on Memorial Day weekend. I am the oldest female action figure ever. No, this is true. I'm a Topps trading card. So there is great news for older women.
Do you do stunts?
You bet.
But wait a minute. This is an animated? This is a robot?
This is me.
Whoa, you're in good shape.
A little bit of martial arts,
Go. Mm-hmm. Goodness. What's that one called? Terminator?
Terminator Salvation.
Oh, my goodness. So we have a lot more work to do on the silver screen than on the Broadway stage and off-Broadway stage is what you're saying.
Oh, I think we're coming into it. I think there's more and more roles coming along. Maybe not leading roles because the demographics don't support it, but we'll get there.
What's the best play other than this you've seen lately? Been around New York at all?
Oh, well, of course, I loved August Osage County.
Isn't that fabulous?
That was really remarkable. But lately I've been so busy I haven't been able to see plays.
Well, of course not. Yeah. But so much good stuff going on in New York. By the way, speaking of New York, I should mention, I said that the Mount Airy Nursing Home was on New York's Upper West Side, which of course it is, but in fact you've put it in Riverdale.
It's in Riverdale. It's not the Baptist home for the aged, the Hebrew home for the aged Baptist division. I wanted it to be completely made up. There is no such place, to my knowledge, as the Mount Airy Nursing Home. It's a confection. It's an invention.
Yes, but I bet anybody that sees the play will say, oh, I know that place.
Yes, they have said that.
I know that place, and I know those people. I mean, that's the extraordinary thing. As I said at the beginning, the subject of your play, Chasing Manet, is something every single one of us has to deal with, and you don't think you're ever going to have to deal with it. But you do, because if you're lucky enough to have parents who live to a certain age, you've got to deal with where to put them and how to deal with them. Yeah. Jane, have you had this issue in your own family? Have you?
Oh, definitely, yeah, with my father. My father was kicked out of 17 nursing homes.
17?
Yeah.
Oh, so he must have been an interesting character.
He was feisty. He rang the night bell 72 times in the last one.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, Tina's got a new play. Oh, you ladies are great. I think we could probably talk about this forever. But, by the way, if you are in the neighborhood, Jane Alexander and Tina Howe will be speaking to their Sarah Lawrence I want to say classmates, not their classmates, but the undergraduates, alums, anybody in the community that wants to go. They are both alums of Sarah Lawrence on Monday night, April 27th at the college at 7:30 p.m. to talk about how they've come full circle since they graduated. This is so exciting. And if you don't get to Bronxville and can't see them Monday night at Sarah Lawrence, then please do go to the performance. Chasing Monet, it's at 59 East 59 Theaters through May 2nd. I've been speaking with the star, Jane Alexander, the playwright, Tina Howe. Thank you both so much for being here. And talk to you later.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you.